Chapter 1. Choose the Right Victim. Everything depends on the target of your seduction. Study your prey thoroughly and choose only those who will prove susceptible to your charms. The right victims are those for whom you can fill a void, who see in you something exotic. They are often isolated, or at least somewhat unhappy, perhaps because of recent adverse circumstances, or can easily be made so, for the completely contented person is almost impossible to seduce. The perfect victim has some natural quality that attracts you. The strong emotions this quality inspires will help make your seductive maneuvers seem more natural and dynamic. The perfect victim allows for the perfect chase. Preparing for the hunt. The young Vicomte de Valmont was a notorious libertine in the Paris of the 1770s, the ruin of many a young girl and the ingenious seducer of the wives of illustrious aristocrats. But after a while, the repetitiveness of it all began to bore him. His successes came too easily. So one year, during the sweltering slow month of August, he decided to take a break from Paris and visit his aunt at her chateau in the provinces. Life there was not what he was used to. There were country walks, chats with the local vicar, card games. His city friends, particularly his fellow libertine and confidant, the Marquise de Merteuil, expected him to hurry back. There were other guests at the chateau, however, including the Présidente de Tourvel, a 22-year-old woman whose husband was temporarily absent, having work to do elsewhere. The Présidente had been languishing at the chateau, waiting for him to join her. Valmont had met her before. She was certainly beautiful, but had a reputation as a prude, who was extremely devoted to her husband. She was not a court lady. Her taste in clothing was atrocious. She always covered her neck with ghastly frills, and her conversation lacked wit. For some reason, however, far from Paris, Valmont began to see these traits in a new light. He followed her to the chapel where she went every morning to pray. He caught glimpses of her at dinner or playing cards. Unlike the ladies of Paris, she seemed unaware of her charms. This excited him. Because of the heat, she wore a simple linen dress, which revealed her figure. A piece of muslin covered her breasts, letting him more than imagine them. Her hair, unfashionable in its slight disorder, conjured the bedroom. And her face, he had never noticed how expressive it was. Her features lit up when she gave alms to a beggar. She blushed at the slightest praise. She was so natural and unself-conscious, and when she talked of her husband or religious matters, he could sense the depth of her feelings. If such a passionate nature were ever detoured into a love affair. Valmont extended his stay at the chateau, much to the delight of his aunt, who could not have guessed at the reason. And he wrote to the Marquise de Merteuil, explaining his new ambition to seduce Madame de Tourvel. The Marquise was incredulous. He wanted to seduce this prude? If he succeeded, how little pleasure she would give him. And if he failed, what a disgrace! The great libertine unable to seduce a wife whose husband was far away. She wrote a sarcastic letter, which only inflamed Valmont further. The conquest of this notoriously virtuous woman would prove his greatest seduction. His reputation would only be enhanced. There was an obstacle, though, that seemed to make success almost impossible. Everyone knew Valmont's reputation, including the Présidente. She knew how dangerous it was to ever be alone with him, how people would talk about the least association with him. Valmont did everything to belie his reputation, even going so far as to attend church services and seem repentant of his ways. The Présidente noticed, but still kept her distance. The challenge she presented to Valmont was irresistible, but could he meet it? Valmont decided to test the waters. One day he arranged a little walk with the présidente and his aunt. He chose a delightful path that they had never taken before, but at a certain point they reached a little ditch, unsuitable for a lady to cross on her own. And yet, Valmont said, the rest of the walk was too nice for them to turn back, and he gallantly picked up his aunt in his arms and carried her across the ditch, making the présidente laugh uproariously. But then it was her turn, and Valmont purposefully picked her up a little awkwardly, so that she caught at his arms, and while he was holding her against him, he could feel her heart beating faster and saw her blush. His aunt saw this too and cried out, "The child is afraid." But Valmont sensed otherwise. Now he knew that the challenge could be met, that the présidente could be won. The seduction could proceed. Interpretation. Valmont, the présidente de Tourvel, and the Marquise de Merteuil are all characters in the 18th century French novel Dangerous Liaisons by Chaudherlot de Laclos. The character of Valmont was inspired by several real-life libertines of the time, most prominent of all the Duc de Richelieu. In the story, Valmont worries that his seductions have become mechanical. He makes a move, and the woman almost always responds the same way. But no two seductions should be the same. A different target should change the whole dynamic. Valmont's problem is that he is always seducing the same type, the wrong type. He realizes this when he meets Madame de Tourvel. It's not because her husband is a count that he decides to seduce her, or because she is stylishly dressed, or is desired by other men, the usual reasons. He chooses her because, in her unconscious way, she has already seduced him. A bare arm, an unrehearsed laugh, a playful manner, all these have captured his attention, because none of them is contrived. Once he falls under her spell, the strength of his desire will make his subsequent maneuvers seem less calculated. He is apparently unable to help himself, and his strong emotions will slowly infect her. Beyond the effect the présidente has on Valmont, she has other traits that make her the perfect victim. She is bored, which draws her toward adventure. She is naive and unable to see through his tricks. Finally, the Achilles heel. She believes herself immune to seduction. Almost all of us are vulnerable to the attractions of other people, and we take precautions against unwanted lapses. Madame de Tourvel takes none. Once Valmont has tested her at the ditch and has seen she is physically vulnerable, he knows that eventually she will fall. Life is short and should not be wasted pursuing and seducing the wrong people. The choice of target is critical. It is the setup of the seduction, and it will determine everything else that follows. The perfect victim does not have certain facial features, or the same taste in music, or similar goals in life. That is how a banal seducer chooses his or her targets. The perfect victim is the person who stirs you in a way that cannot be explained in words, whose effect on you has nothing to do with superficialities. He or she often has a quality that you yourself lack and may even secretly envy. The présidente, for example, has an innocence that Valmont long ago lost or never had. There should be a little bit of tension. The victim may fear you a little, even slightly dislike you. Such tension is full of erotic potential and will make the seduction much livelier. Be more creative in choosing your prey, and you will be rewarded with a more exciting seduction. Of course, it means nothing if the potential victim is not open to your influence. Test the person first. Once you feel that he or she is also vulnerable to you, then the hunting can begin. Keys to seduction. Throughout life, we find ourselves having to persuade people to seduce them. Some will be relatively open to our influence, if only in subtle ways, while others seem impervious to our charms. Perhaps we find this a mystery beyond our control, but that is an ineffective way of dealing with life. Seducers, whether sexual or social, prefer to pick the odds. As often as possible, they go toward people who betray some vulnerability to them and avoid the ones who cannot be moved. To leave people who are inaccessible to you alone is a wise path. You cannot seduce everyone. On the other hand, you must actively hunt out the prey that responds the right way. This will make your seductions that much more pleasurable and satisfying. How do you recognize your victims? By the way they respond to you. You should not pay so much attention to their conscious responses. A person who is obviously trying to please or charm you is probably playing to your vanity and wants something from you. Instead, pay greater attention to those responses outside conscious control. A blush, an involuntary mirroring of some gesture of yours, an unusual shyness, even, perhaps, a flash of anger or resentment. All of these show that you are having an effect on a person who is open to your influence. Like Valmont, you can also recognize the right targets by the effect they are having on you. Perhaps they make you uneasy, perhaps they correspond to a deep-rooted childhood ideal, or represent some kind of personal taboo that excites you, or suggests the person you imagine you would be if you were the opposite sex. When a person has such a deep effect on you, it transforms all of your subsequent maneuvers. Your face and gestures become more animated. You have more energy. When victims resist you, as a good victim should, you, in turn, will be more creative, more motivated to overcome their resistance. The seduction will move forward like a good play. Your strong desire will infect the target and give them the dangerous sensation that they have a power over you. Of course, you are the one ultimately in control, since you are making your victims emotional at the right moments, leading them back and forth. Good seducers choose targets that inspire them, but they know how and when to restrain themselves. Never rush into the waiting arms of the first person who seems to like you. That is not seduction, but insecurity. The need that draws you will make for a low-level attachment, and interest on both sides will sag. Look at the types you have not considered before. That is where you will find challenge and adventure. Experienced hunters do not choose their prey by how easily it is caught. They want the thrill of the chase, a life and death struggle. The fiercer, the better. Although the victim who is perfect for you depends on you, certain types lend themselves to a more satisfying seduction. Casanova liked young women who were unhappy or had suffered a recent misfortune. Such women appealed to his desire to play the savior, but it also responded to necessity. Happy people are much harder to seduce. Their contentment makes them inaccessible. It's always easier to fish in troubled waters. Also, an air of sadness is itself quite seductive. Genji, the hero of the Japanese novel The Tale of Genji, could not resist a woman with a melancholic air. In Kierkegaard's book, The Seducer's Diary, the narrator, Johannes, has one main requirement in his victim. She must have imagination. That is why he chooses a woman who lives in a fantasy world, a woman who will envelop his every gesture in poetry, imagining far more than is there. Just as it's hard to seduce a person who's happy, it's hard to seduce a person who has no imagination. For women, the manly man is often the perfect victim. Mark Antony was of this type. He loved pleasure, was quite emotional, and when it came to women, found it hard to think straight. He was easy for Cleopatra to manipulate. Once she gained a hold on his emotions, she kept him permanently on a string. A woman should never be put off by a man who seems overly aggressive. He is often the perfect victim. It's easy, with a few coquettish tricks, to turn that aggression around and make him your slave. Such men actually enjoy being made to chase after a woman. Be careful with appearances. The person who seems volcanically passionate is often hiding insecurity and self-involvement. This was what most men failed to perceive in the 19th century courtesan Lola Montez. She seemed so dramatic, so exciting. In fact, she was a troubled, self-obsessed woman, but by the time men discovered this, it was too late. They had become involved with her and could not extricate themselves without months of drama and torture. People who are outwardly distant or shy are often better targets than extroverts. They are dying to be drawn out, and still waters run deep. People with a lot of time on their hands are extremely susceptible to seduction. They have mental space for you to fill. Tullia d'Aragona, the infamous 16th century Italian courtesan, preferred young men as her victims. Besides the physical reason for such a preference, they were more idle than working men with careers, and therefore more defenseless against an ingenious seductress. On the other hand, you should generally avoid people who are preoccupied with business or work. Seduction demands attention, and busy people have too little space in their minds for you to occupy. According to Freud, seduction begins early in life, in our relationship with our parents. They seduce us physically, both with bodily contact and by satisfying desires such as hunger, and we in turn try to seduce them into paying us attention. We are creatures by nature vulnerable to seduction throughout our lives. We all want to be seduced. We yearn to be drawn out of ourselves, out of our routines, and into the drama of Eros. And what draws us more than anything is the feeling that someone has something we don't, a quality we desire. Your perfect victims are often people who think you have something they don't, and who will be enchanted to have it provided for them. Such victims may have a temperament quite the opposite of yours, and this difference will create an exciting tension. When Jiang Qing, later known as Madame Mao, first met Mao Zedong in 1937 in his mountain retreat in western China, she could sense how desperate he was for a bit of color and spice in his life. All the camp's women dressed like the men and abjured any feminine finery. Jiang had been an actress in Shanghai and was anything but austere. She supplied what he lacked, and she also gave him the added thrill of being able to educate her in communism, appealing to his Pygmalion complex, the desire to dominate, control, and remake a person. In fact, it was Jiang Qing who controlled her future husband. The greatest lack of all is excitement and adventure, which is precisely what seduction offers. In 1964, the Chinese actor Shi Pei Pu, a man who had gained fame as a female impersonator, met Bernard Bourricot, a young diplomat assigned to the French embassy in China. Bourricot had come to China looking for adventure and was disappointed to have little contact with Chinese people. Pretending to be a woman who, when still a child, had been forced to live as a boy, supposedly the family already had too many daughters, Shi Pei Pu used the young Frenchman's boredom and discontent to manipulate him. Inventing a story of the deceptions he had to go through, he slowly drew Bourricot into an affair that would last many years. Bourricot had had previous homosexual encounters, but considered himself heterosexual. Eventually, the diplomat was led into spying for the Chinese. All the while, he believed Shi Pei Pu was a woman. His yearning for adventure had made him that vulnerable. Repressed types are perfect victims for a deep seduction. People who repress the appetite for pleasure make ripe victims, particularly later in their lives. The 8th century Chinese emperor Ming Huang spent much of his reign trying to rid his court of its costly addiction to luxuries, and was himself a model of austerity and virtue. But the moment he saw the concubine, Yang Guifei, bathing in the palace lake, everything changed. The most charming woman in the realm, she was the mistress of his son. Exerting his power, the emperor won her away, only to become her abject slave. The choice of the right victim is equally important in politics. Mass seducers such as Napoleon or John F. Kennedy offer their public just what it lacks. When Napoleon came to power, the French people's sense of pride was beaten down by the bloody aftermath of the French Revolution. He offered them glory and conquest. Kennedy recognized that Americans were bored with the stultifying comfort of the Eisenhower years. He gave them adventure and risk. More important, he tailored his appeal to the group most vulnerable to it, the younger generation. Successful politicians know that not everyone will be susceptible to their charm, but if they can find a group of believers with a need to be filled, they have supporters who will stand by them no matter what. Reversal. There is no possible reversal. There is nothing to be gained from trying to seduce the person who is closed to you or who cannot provide the pleasure and chase that you need.